You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, we're going to be talking about Mars. You know, and much of what we hear about Mars comes from the impressive work of the Mars rover mission, those two rovers which have been sending back pictures of the surface as clear as if they were taken in our own backyards. But we don't hear as much about the Mars Express mission. That is operated by the European Space Agency. And that is a spacecraft that is orbiting the red planet and it is sending back equally remarkable findings. And the spacecraft's most recent observations suggest that Mars is much more geologically active than previously thought. That means the ground moves more on Mars, more than expected not very long ago. And Mars has a large frozen sea just below the surface at the equator. All this points to a much more dynamic Mars with a changing climate rather than the cold, dead planet that people are used to hearing about it. So here to talk about the latest news from Mars is Jim Head. He is co-investigator of the high-resolution stereo camera for the Mars Express mission and professor of geological sciences at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. He joins us from Houston. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Head.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a very exciting time.
Why is it so exciting?
Well, you know, we've been looking at Mars for a long time, and many people have looked at the tons of craters, the thousands and billions of craters on the surface, and as you suggested, they've concluded that Mars is pretty old and it might not have very much geological activity now. Everybody's thought it has more activity than the Moon, but still, you know, thought maybe for the last billion years or so it's been pretty dead. And these new results unequivocally show recent volcanic activity, recent tropical mountain glaciers, glaciers in the equatorial regions, and as you said, evidence for recent surface floods, which in fact might have had pack ice, like we see in the Arctic oceans, in the equatorial regions of Mars.
Yeah, I saw that photo that's been published about, it looks like a mountain that's melting, if I would draw a radio picture. Is that a good description of it?
Well, there's several things going on. First of all, when you look at this pack ice, like material, people have seen some of these things in earlier data and thought they were plates of lava. But a pretty convincing case has been made, I think, based on a lot of other features indicating water flowing over the surface, that in fact it may well be sheets of ice that froze, just like in the Arctic situation. And indeed, that's really important from the point of view of very recent activity, very recent flooding. It has a lot of implications for climate change, for interior change, and even life, actually.
When you say recent, you don't mean yesterday.
Not exactly, but, you know, we talk geologically, and that's a little bit of a problem since essentially geological time has such long-term consequences. But we're talking in the past few millions to tens of millions of years, which sounds like a long period of time, but remember that, of course, the planet is about 4.5 billion years old, so that means it's literally alive today, no question about that.
So that picture that I saw, which looked like, you know, the side of a mountain melting, and there was a puddle, like a floor, that really was ice down there, or refrozen water that melted up out of the surface?
It appears that there was a crack in the surface, and you can see lots of evidence for what looked like dry river valleys coming out of that, and the water flowed out of that crack from the subsurface and then ponded in a low area, and that's where all these plate-like features appear. There's no question that water flowed on the surface there, and at issue is exactly, you know, the detailed interpretation of this pack ice and so on, but it's a very, very startling revelation in the past couple of years, and most particularly with a high-resolution stereo camera Mars Express data.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. You mentioned in passing that this might have implications for life. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, of course, Mars is really one of the most Earth-like planets, and so we have meteorites from Mars that have been blown off the surface and landed in Antarctica, and some of these have features in them that have been suggested to be formed by life. And, of course, given the climate, given these samples, it's a major, major goal of our exploration of Mars is to try to understand how we could detect life and so on. And recently, the same Mars Express spacecraft, using an instrument from orbit, detected methane in the atmosphere. And this is a very short-lived gas, and the suggestion is that one of the main ways that could happen is from life. In addition to that, if the water is coming from the subsurface, which we're sure it is, given the evidence we have from these images from Mars Express, then it means that life could exist in the near surface, in the subsurface, protected from a more harsh planetary environment that we have here on Earth. So it's sort of like you could imagine a crack, liquid water coming out with potentially bacterial life in it, and then basically you could go collect freeze-dried fossils from these deposits.
Could we still have life existing in the water, frozen?
Well, that's the major question. I think the conditions in early Mars seem to be very favorable. Many of the reports that we heard here at the conference in Houston this week were very much indicative of a warmer, wetter earlier Mars in which there might have been rain and a climate that was conducive to perhaps the formation of life. But this is the major question. It's not a known, it's an unknown, and that's really the heart of exploration. We want to go find out and test for these ideas and ask the questions. So I think we now have an excellent place to go to actually look for that sort of thing. We know where the water is. We know where the deposits ended up, and it would be one of the places that we want to go to actually try to sample and bring samples back to see if, in fact, life was there.
So if we were to touch down on that spot that we're talking about where the water has pooled, would we actually see a giant glacier sitting there?
You'd probably see things like we see in the Antarctic dry valleys where,
right.
For example, I've visited there for several field seasons, and it's one of the most Mars-like places on the Earth. And you walk along the surface, and it's covered with rocks, and you think, you know, this is it's very dry, little snow, it's Mars-like, but when you dig down 20 or 30 inches, underneath that is solid glacial ice. And yet all the manifestations of the nearby glaciers are gone, and you're just looking at that surface. So in essence, it's a dead glacier caused by the freezing of the water that flowed out. And that, what you would expect is to have essentially ice just below a protective sediment layer that kept the ice from going up into the atmosphere.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. So do you think this is a prime spot to send, if we were going to send people or another robot to dig up a sample and do some tests for life?
I think definitely. You know, we have a wonderful international Mars exploration program, the Mars Express mission, and of course upcoming U.S. missions and Japanese missions and additional European ones. And so the exciting thing is that given the methane detection, which is also broadly speaking from this area, and these results, and also detection of water in the subsurface in these general regions in the equatorial region, all of this strongly suggests that these are prime candidates to look for evidence of past or even present biological activity.
Mm-hmm. Is there any? Are there any missions coming up that we might redirect to these places?
Well, there's one coming up that's a lander called the Phoenix mission, which will land at moderate latitudes, 50 or so degrees north latitudes, mid to high latitudes, that will actually dig down and through the soil and look to see if it can find ice. So that's a major step in that direction to see if, in fact, in the near subsurface, in these kinds of environments, you might expect to find ice. So that's going to be a real pathfinder, this Phoenix mission.
But you say you've already done that in this place.
Well, we haven't dug down.
Right.
Okay.
But
so,
from overhead, you're pretty sure this would be a place where you could dig down and find ice.
Yes, I think that's the case. And yet, you know, putting together a series of remote observations and actually going down and finding it in one spot are two different things. For example, the detectors that we have from orbit, as excellent as they are, they have a surface resolution of a couple hundred miles. So, you know, when you look at a planet the size of Mars, you can say there's ice in that broad region, but, you know, it might be 100% ice below the surface in one place and none in the other, and you're getting an average signal. So this lander, Phoenix, will help really determine what's going on at the local scale. And I would say in our upcoming missions, like the biological missions that the U.S. is going to fly in the next decade, that these will certainly be prime landing sites, prime landing areas to consider for those, no question.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Mars rovers have gotten a lot of attention, as I said earlier, but you guys seem to be getting as much data or more interesting stuff back now, you know, the rovers being so limited to where they could go.
I think it's, you know, it's very complementary. You know, a significant part of the conference here in Houston at the Lunar and Planetary Science Institute was dedicated to the results of the rovers, and they're fantastic. I mean, they've gone way beyond the expectations of all of us in terms of length of time, as way beyond warranty, as they say, and buy your battery from these people, I'm telling you. The thing is that they're getting wonderful results at the detail level, and then we can place those in the context of these regional and global measurements. So it's extremely complementary. It's neither one nor the other, but it's tremendously complementary. We're getting remote sensing data from the Omega instrument, a fringed instrument on the spacecraft, that's giving us mineralogy, which we can link to that's being detected on the surface. So it's very exciting and very complementary.
What questions do you need to be answered, you know, that might be answered remotely by, you know, the missions that are there now or by another robot coming soon?
Well, I think that we have very fundamental questions, and among them is environments that might be conducive to the formation and evolution of life. And I think, too, you know, for example, the detection of this methane that's been done by three different techniques, but you could get it from the decay of organisms or production of organisms, or you could get it from maybe volcanic emissions, which would be exciting because it would mean Mars is very volcanically active. But there's several different ways that you might be able to get this, only one of which is life. So it's important to go and look and try to narrow those things down for example, we're trying to design an airplane to fly in called Ares to go into the Mars atmosphere and fly over the atmosphere for 1,000 kilometers at about 1 to 2 kilometers altitude. So these would be the kind of things that we would like to try to do to follow up on these measurements, look at the methane, look at the places where they are, and get a really good understanding of the distribution. And, for example, with the airplane, you would fly between the orbital altitude and the surface altitude for 1,000 kilometers and really get an excellent idea of what was going on at that level. So these are the kinds of things that many people want to do to follow up.
Mm-hmm. Hi, let's go to the phones. Hi, Mark in Redding, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the warmest and the coldest spot on Mars and in the warmest time of the year, and is there life as we know it that can exist in those spots?
The answer is that in the equatorial region, sometimes it can actually get up just on very warm summer days to just above freezing, okay? So you can actually get local environments in which you might be able to stand on the surface if the atmospheric pressure was good enough and actually feel mildly comfortable. Okay, that's why we go to the Antarctic dry valleys, because the temperatures there are right around that. Of course, at the poles, it's so cold that you couldn't survive, way, way cold. We don't know whether there's life there at the present time. And again, that's one of the major questions. It has to do with our own being, if you will, to try to understand what conditions life could form and how it could survive. So that's really why we're going, and we really don't know the answer to that question, but it's an incredible driver for exploration, trying to understand the unknown.
Talking about the latest update about Mars this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, talking with Jim Head, co-investigator of the high-resolution stereo camera for the Mars Express. Do you think that we could send a robot there and, you know, do a laboratory sample and find out if they're living or dormant
fossils,
or the fossils or dormant bacteria waiting to add a little water and they come back to life?
I think so. Experiments like that were tried on Viking,
controversial one. That was.
They were, and we learned a lot about the surface chemistry. But the trick is that what you need to do is get below the surface, because at least relatively recently, Mars' surface environment is very harsh. But again, there's evidence that in the past it was much more like it is on Earth today, in the broad sense, warmer and wetter. And so if I were a microorganism alive at that time, you know, I would quickly evolve to the subsurface. And we see subsurface microorganisms all over the place on the Earth in very harsh environments. Indeed, back to the previous question, indeed, any of these environments, we found evidence for life on the Earth. It's just unreal. In the coldest places in Antarctica, there's evidence for life. So indeed, NASA is developing instruments to detect organic molecules and signs of life, which will then fly on these missions in the next few years, definitely.
Lisa in Florida, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My son is in fifth grade, and he's giving a Tropicana speech on Mars, and one of the comments he has learned about is the debate on the theory of Malthusian expansions. And I was wondering if...
He's way ahead of us on that one.
Well, I know that Mars is not going to be able to help with either supplying food for the Earth or population growth, but is there any talk yet, realistic talk, of living in close quarters under a dome in Mars?
I think a lot of people are really starting to think about that seriously. You know, President Bush has essentially proclaimed as a national goal returning humans to the moon and then going on to Mars. There's a lot of work going on now. It's a very important NASA program, and it will complement greatly the automated exploration program. And I think the long run, as astronaut John Young constantly says, single planet species don't survive. And I think we really have a lot of things like impacts that could kill the dinosaurs. Ask them about it. They're not around anymore, but there are lots of major volcanic eruptions and other things that happen on the Earth that, as John Young would say, it's really important to try to understand how we can live off-planet so that in the long run we survive. So indeed, you know, we have a human exploration program that NASA's very well into at the moment, and we I think that should develop into something where we learn to live basically off the planet for our own survival.
Thank you, Lisa. Good luck on your son's project.
Thank you. Is there any chance you could comment on recent volcanism on Mars?
Yes, indeed. We see a lot of evidence for that. And again, it's in geological time. We haven't seen yet any evidence that there's an erupting plume at the moment. But even if you were in orbit around the Earth for a couple of years, you might not see that. But indeed, geologically, it's clearly an alive planet today, which is really important. And maybe even some of this methane that has been reported might come from fumes coming out of volcanoes that we just can't see erupting at the moment.
Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-989-8255. That would be something to see one erupting.
It certainly would. I'd be the first one in line for the orbital trip to see that too. Believe me.
But it's with all the volcanic or the recent. I mean, geologically recent. It would be something that would be not impossible to expect, right?
Not at all. I think that's again. You know, as we talk to the astronauts, I'm actually going to be in Houston again in a couple of weeks to talk to the new astronaut candidates and. And one of the things that we'll talk about is not just the exciting things on Mars, but the potential dangers as well. And you know, it's just like here on Earth. Recent eruptions on the Earth and Mars could be a hazard that all of us will have to think about as humans prepare to go to Mars.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be in touch, and I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us. And good luck.
My pleasure. These are really exciting times, and thank everyone for their support of the space program.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us. Jim Head, co-investigator of the high-resolution stereo camera for the Mars Express mission. That's the European Space Agency's mission. He's also professor of geological sciences at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Our program is produced by Annette Heist, Todd Neal, and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and web producer. Our intern is Corey Binns. If you'd like to write us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036, or surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We make a free curricula you can take to your classrooms. Click on the teachers button on the left there, and you can download free teaching materials. Also, you can listen on iPod to Science Friday or on Real Audio. And go into our archives and listen to this program later or back editions. I'm Ira Flato in New York.